It's so, by its nature, divisive. Now, Steve, to get you back into the discussion, from your perspective with the law enforcement background and your analytical mind, how you scrutinize things, how do you see, with the benefit of hindsight, how the security apparatus kicked into gear? Like, were you aware of Halt gaining possession of that audio tape of Larry's regression, or is this new to you also?
No, that's all new to me. And matter of fact, I never even knew about any of that stuff until Larry came in and talked to me in the dorm that day. And then after he talked to me and after I got back into civilian life, I had nothing to do. I figured I was home free. I'm done. I'm out of there. But much like Larry, I got a call one day in the day room, and it was my old partner, and he said, "Hey, I'm downstairs. Can you come down? I want to talk with you." And this was Senior Airman Palmer, and he's the one that witnessed the UFO with me. And I was like, "Okay." And I went down, and I see this dark car. So in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, "Okay, here we go." So I was kind of jacked up, getting ready to get in a fight. The minute I kind of looked in the back seat, kind of see what was going on, you know. So I sat in the front seat, in the passenger seat, and he asked me, "Hey, how's it going? I heard you got in a bit of trouble, and you're going to be getting, out of the Air Force and stuff like that. I just want to check, see how you're doing." As soon as he said that, I knew something was wrong because he was kind of self-centered and never seemed to really care about anybody but himself. That was just my perspective. He might be a nice guy, and that might be a mischaracterization, but at the time, that was my perspective of him. And I told him, "Hey," I said, "listen, I'm out of here. I'm going to be getting out of the service soon. I just want to go home, forget I was ever in the service, forget everything that happened, just start life over and just get on with it." Because I knew he was probing me. I could tell the way he was asking the questions. And then afterwards, he confessed and he goes, "Hey," he goes, "by the way," he goes, "I'm Air Force OSI now." I said, "What?" And he said, "Yeah." He goes, "I got promoted. I'm OSI now." I'm like, "Oh, all right, cool. Good for you." So I think his first assignment was to go see if he could pump me for information, see where my head was at, and see whether I was going to talk, not talk, or just get a feel for where I was at or something. And that was the last time I talked with him. And we never even talked about the incident. We never talked about what we saw again ever after that. So, yeah. So I think he either was involved in my incident somehow, or he was talked to afterwards and played nice, and they gave him a promotion and, whatever.
Well, when you had that missing time experience, he was the guy that was standing alongside you.
So I don't know. I've looked at this. What did I actually see? Everybody's asked me that. What do you think you saw? Did I see a craft? Yeah, I saw something. My mind says I saw this craft. But did I actually see it? Was I hallucinating? Did they hit me with something and give me a mind suggestion or something? Was it a hologram? Was it a slip in time where only we could see it and nobody else could? I have no idea, and I'll probably go to my grave never knowing, I mean, could be time travelers like Tennyson thinks. I've no idea.
Well, there had been a pattern. Bastinza and Burroughs talk about the light coming down, and Bastinza talking about them being paralyzed. And then next thing you know, they're going back to the staging area, and they've been gone for 30 or 40 minutes. So something definitely had happened to them. Larry, I wanted you to clarify some points also that you recall from when you were taken underground. You were At some point, I don't know if it was just you or you and perhaps others, but you were placed on seats in kind of a small theater resembling place, and there was a big screen in front of you, and then apparently some intelligence behind the screen, you saw a silhouette or something, was speaking to you guys telepathically. Could you bring us how you were led to that point, and then what happened?
Have a memory of that as I wrote it exactly still, and it was like the old Sony big screen TVs. That's all that my cousin had one in Boston for Sony, but it wasn't. Now this could all been put in I wrote about it because I said, you know, there were other people also. That's all I can say because it's just pictures, just quick, just quick. And then walking out of the photo lab on the Rod Bentwaters runway, and looking back and going, what the hell? And just as I wrote it in the book, and I've taken a polygraph, so I've passed that. I wasn't asked about that. In fact, I have to say, I don't bring up that aspect much now because it's just too, and I think it was designed to be just too far out, you know, looking back. But like I said in the audio, the hypnosis that was done by Bud Hopkins in the Peter was there when that was conducted. I was skeptical about hypnosis, very skeptical. And there were other names in that, and it was very clinical. It was not an alien situation. It was a, and there were air, it was very clinical. So that's where that dynamic changes. To go to your point on the spooks doing all, you know, in about that or whatever it is, you're already going to turn to dust what happened in that field. And what happened in that field is as clear as it can be for all the, it would be for all these years later. I mean, I always hear about Adrian and, you know, he said a bunch of different things and how affected he was, very Christian guy. And no, but listen, it wasn't easy for me either, you know. I was, oh, poor. And, you know, he's a wonderful guy. I remember, you know, him and me in March, like I wrote, you know, we got to go to the newspapers and all that. I think at that point, probably that day, that's when I went in Steve's room that afternoon and told him about what had happened because Bastinza was freaked out. Eyes that you didn't even see other people anymore. There was no rumor mill. It wasn't a story from the pub, you know, that we have the guy Nevels, who was our disaster preparedness. The I was there. His story has changed more than a Da Vinci painting for whatever reason. I don't bridges on all of us. And he's a Holt boy. He's a Colonel Holt narrative guy. The story you tell about Burroughs and Bastinza going into the light, that was after I left the site. And John went forward. He wasn't allowed out there. He was back, you know, 50 yards or 100 yards, whatever it was, 100 yards. So that was all the same night. And that is the night, you know, Steve Longero was out there. I saw him go one way and he's confirmed all this, you know. Number of guys, and we were pretty new. I don't know. I had gone from C to D flight. They were flipping me around. I had my PRP. I had all the stuff they say I didn't have. I got on that base the same day as Ed Cabanasak, who was involved in night one. Well, how come he was out there? But you know, they just have this line. Holt says horrible things. I had some real ugly troll types over here in England. You know who I mean. And, you know, they got themselves a bit famous, didn't they? With outright outlandish lies and stunning things. Peter jumped right on in with them. That was his out. And it was not a nice few years, which was the intention. But here we are. Gary's book has come out. I don't agree with all of it. However, as favorable as it is, it's still not exact on me, and it was not 4 nights. Now he's entitled to his opinion, and he's done a good job. It caused problems with the whole, you know what I mean, the other thing. And there's always politics in this stuff. To me, I just want movies out, the false narrative that has been in play since 1992. And that is led by Charles Holt. He knows it. I know it. He should take a polygraph. He never will. Steve doesn't have to because I know what happened to him. I knew him then. I know the score. But there's some other people, boy, that I take one, Jim. Take one, John. Not John so much. John's, I think, very confused with it. He's a pretty nice guy. But why aren't they held to the grindstone? And I don't mean Steve. I don't mean Longero. I don't mean Bastinza, because I don't have to wonder with those guys, because I knew them. I knew what was where we were in little parts. I know with Steve, 100%. So it's very frustrating. Well, it's not frustrating. I'm 62 this summer. And we're all over, we're the kids involved, and we're all in our 60s now. So we're all going to start, doing that age dance. I want the film out. I've been saying this for, what, 30 years now? Allegedly, I don't know. Because, and if it's done well, that's going to move it forward. Steve's in it. Steve is in it. And I guess as long as we look good in it. I know that's it.
Yeah, show the experience in as much as we know of its totality, and show the landing, show the occupants alighting from the craft, show the meeting, show the aftermath. Because to me, the aftermath was as important as the encounter itself, the human cost of all this. And just a quick point about the screen, okay? I know from, and I'm not saying that this was the case that you and the others had experienced with the big screen thing, but I know from a mind control perspective, it's happened to me. They'll either take us singly or individually, rather singly or in groups, into what seems to be a darkened theater, a proper darkened theater, and with a big theater screen, and then they just run through in lightning sequence, car chase scenes, war scenes, this, that, and the other. And I think the intention is to scramble one's mind and memories before sending them back to bed or sending them back home or whatever. Because there was clearly sometimes I recall when I was in a semi-populated theater setting watching something on a theater screen, and other times I would be sitting there by myself, but like a couple of rows back and a couple of over would be sitting someone sitting there watching me as I'm being presented with this spectacle of car chases and war scenes and what have you. So my tentative intuitive guess is it's something just to scramble our memories before sending us back. So it wouldn't surprise me that that technique, I'm not saying again it's the case would happen with you guys, but it wouldn't surprise me if something like that had been done and it was humans behind it, not so much ETs. On the other hand, and just to play devil's advocate, there have been instances in some underground bases where people reported seeing behind a screen or behind some partition, sensing, intuiting, and lack of a better term, alien presence. So, it goes both ways. And getting back to the nature of the experience too is Roswell was a great case. It was a case that made the case, but like the researchers were saying 20, 30 years ago, we're in a race with the Undertakers because our witnesses are starting to die out now, and there's only a handful of them left. Similar, I'm not saying you guys have got a lot of wake-ups yet to go, but I'm saying that I'm in my late 50s, you guys in your early mid 60s, time marches on. So I would like to see more witnesses come forward because now, and let's see if all this talk about disclosure and UAPs and all that is just fluff and blarney. And let's see what happens when real players from Reynolds from Forrest start to come back, start to emerge, and I hope Capel Green has something to do with that. I hope this discussion we're having has something to do with that. You have a safe place to come and talk about this on the Cosmic Switchboard Show, and you will be immediately, plugged into two real players such as yourself. A quick comment, then I'd like to bounce it back to you guys. I got to know John Vasquez very well, a good friend of mine. He was involved in the Fort Benning, Georgia, September 1977 mass alien abduction incident involving a whole infantry battalion out on a nighttime parade formation. Anyway, and all the mind control and skullduggery that he endured, he was essentially assigned a co-author. Get this, and you probably heard me tell the story before, but this co-author of his did everything possible to isolate him from other witnesses coming forward. And I said to John, I go, that doesn't make sense. He should be connecting you with people, individually debriefing you, and then comparing your stories and letting you talk and see, what kind of correlations you can come up with, right? But this guy systematically kept John isolated. And I told John, this guy's not your friend. So the point being is, it's yet another example of the efforts to keep this at an arm's length UAP tic-tac level, right? Instead of the sink your teeth where the pedal meets the metal kind of thing that we're talking about here. And Steve, I'd like your comments about that or anything else.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to bring up something that Larry had talked about. When I wrote my book, like I said, I dedicated it a chapter to him, and I didn't go into like heavy detail about everything he talked to me about, because it was, I don't know, you only got so much pages you got to fill, right? But I do remember Larry specifically saying that there was some alien-looking being behind a screen, and I can confirm absolutely that he said that day that he walked into my dorm room. And it was weird because here I am just sitting there chilling out, and he comes in, closes the door, locks it. Hey, can I talk to you? I heard you saw something the other day. And I was just like, oh God, here we go. I was thinking, great, I'm just gonna get my balls busted, But then he started telling me about his story, and I was just like, oh, okay. And at that point, I started, just kind of looking around, perking up a little bit, maybe a little more situational awareness, And I did notice that there was this one female, and maybe Larry can confirm this with me. She got to the base maybe, I don't know, maybe a month or so after Larry's incident. And she was a short, cute little girl. Might want to call her a honey bot, honey badger or a honey pot. Anyway, she was hanging around all the security guys, and she finally hooked up with one of them. And she had something to do with the, she was a photographer. So she had something to do with that photo lab that Larry came out of from the underground base. And I know that the one guy that she ended up dating, he, it was weird. We had such weird schedules. I don't want to say he was missing, but I didn't see him for a time. And it might have been he was on a different schedule than I was. But when I saw him again, he wasn't the same character. He had shaved his head. He broke up with this girl, and I said, hey man, what's up, man? You seem a little reserved, because he was always kind of a, outgoing person. Oh, this girl, she kind of screwed my head over, blah, blah, blah. No. But whatever she did to him, she definitely messed with his head. And it might have just been a lover thing, but that girl always stuck in my mind as she was there either trolling or there as a disruptor, or she was there to gather info or something, but she wasn't there for no reason. I guarantee you that. But like I said, I can't go into a whole lot of detail, some of the stuff I did, but I used to profile people, and I can tell you she was somebody. It wasn't just some schmuck photographer.
It wouldn't be the first time. The old KGB, GRU call them swallows, right? And then Americans, call them honey pots. So East Germans, send in the Romeo agents to engage in relationships with, spinster type as clerk at the parliament, right, in West Germany. So those things do happen. And thank you for sharing the bit about the alien behind the screen, because and there's no guarantee that that's what it is. Again, we're all speculating here, but
But from Lenny's point of view at that time, that's
yes,
where his mindset was there was an alien behind the screen
yeah,
communicating with him. And he
Yeah.
told me that. And
Yeah.
no, I mean, all everything that Larry said about that underground base, I can confirm that's exactly what he told me that day. Yep.
And the key takeaway that I got from it is similar things have been reported by alien abductees before. So I'm looking at this also not just from an investigating a field investigator perspective, but someone who's had experiences and network with others who've had experiences, because this Rendlesham Forest series of incidents encompasses the whole wide spectrum of the alien phenomena in a nutshell. Alien abductions, missing time, deep black military skullduggery. So that's another thing that sets this apart. And the futile efforts of some of these researchers who delve, who stick a toe into Rendlesham, and they only want to go so far. Just take it up to the point of service people chasing lights through the forest and kind of leave it hanging there when so much had gone on, right? The whole deep black thing, and what Larry and you just talked about, the alien bit behind the screen, to me that's a key takeaway, no matter what we can ultimately make out of it, right? I only bring it up because it jives with other testimony and other underground bases and other abductee accounts. And then we talk about the very real physical after effects. And Larry has been very outspoken about this. Do you want to give the viewers and listeners, Larry, just a rundown of some of the maladies and illnesses you came down with as a result of this encounter you were supposedly never at? Okay.
Wasn't in the Air Force, some say. If you hear me, on the street, guys. Sorry, and it gets worse. It's worse now. The flash burns to the eyes, retinal damage. Not just me, others. Not just John Burroughs. I was the first on record with all this. Exposure to a non-shielded nuclear device, medically documented. New Britain General Hospital in Connecticut when I was hemorrhaging, 5 years after. Those are the most notable documented. The flash burns were like I looked at an arc welder's torch without the glasses for however brief, and I think that's when that light went. So yeah, you don't make that up. And the radiac thing, when they came back in New Britain, my first wife, who Steve met, he was at my wedding, in 1985, by the way. That doctor came in, a couple of them, and asked me if I had ever been in the military. And I said, yeah. And they said, were you ever around? I remember a non-shielded nuclear device. And I said, not that I know of. And we did have nuke tacs on the base, but I didn't go near them or anything. But unshielded. And they said, well, you're showing signs of exposure to a non-shielded radioactive or nuclear device. And they almost didn't want nothing to do with it. They took blood tests, all this. Did I have trouble again with it? It seemed to even out, or I just drank a lot from that point on and never noticed. I don't know. But yeah, real stuff way before John Burroughs and this payout and all that. I don't buy any of that. I don't buy it. There's no proof of it. He had health issues because big guy in the heart. I have no doubt he went through his experience, of course. But all this, it's tic-tac now, UAP with the emphasis on P, virtue signaling by God, half of them weren't even born. When Steve and I did that talk in Massachusetts, and he may not remember, this is how long we've been around. J. Allen Hynek was one of the speakers that day. From close, I almost said from Star Wars, from Close Encounters. The guy with the big count raised, didn't he? So that's how long Stan Freeman, these were all, they're some are very nice people. I knew Alan, he was supportive of Rendlesham. But nowadays, the virtue signalers, the internet jockeys, all the specialists, they don't want anything before history as they're trying to erase it. It's nothing new, is it, with history? Well, I'll be damned if they're going to do it with this. You know, I mean, whatever I got left in me. I will say that movie that hopefully about this movie when it comes out, because I won't allow that no more. I'm way 6 years in. Come on now. But sorry, I don't mind saying it. You know, it's frustrating. But some of the people in it think it is a run-of-the-mill Rendlesham thing. We've all seen. I've been in many of them. You can't control it. This is not. This involves family. It involves friends. Real life that I've known from 50 years. My best friend Steve's in it. My dead parents are in it, who were alive when the movie began. So you know, these that is the first thing, where it's a human thing for once. The UFO types don't like the human part of the subject. They forget it's really a human issue, isn't it? In the end, they're not interested in that. Interested in, you know, here's my next gig, you know, and I could go into all that bunch. They're all the same. And they do financially very well off the backs of people like Steve and myself and Jim, all, you know, all of them, even Halt, and he don't even, he does and doesn't care. And I hope this has been clear, but it's, you know, you won't see MUFON booking me. I don't do the public UFO crap anymore. Whether they want me to or not, believe it or not, I probably don't like them either. So they don't have to worry about what they think of me at all. It's the probably mutual and too outspoken, man. And I always was. MUFON, just for an example, lets my co-author put a bio in the Denver MUFON symposium proceedings that was absolutely false, saying my book was stopped because I was a liar. And we contacted MUFON and said, that is a lie. Take that out. I stopped the book. I had to because of him. And they did nothing about it. But I've had run-ins with that gang for years. They're the ones that tried to stop me. This is where Gary Heseltine got it wrong in his book, saying people made me change. No one made me do anything. They tried to stop me at the Washington, at the American University. I was doing a talk, and they tried to stop me when I got to the meat of the third night. And I said, well, I ain't playing that. And I took 800 people out in the lawn and finished what I was supposed to be doing. So you'll never see me on their Christmas.
There's been questions about MUFON for so long, and the sometimes curious behavior of Walt Andrus. You guys remember him, the old long term MUFON.
He was the guy that came on stage trying to stop me in DC and Walt. Yep. That's all. Yep.
Yeah, and what they're doing also is it's an effort at memory holding. We're seeing this in the culture wars now, the woke culture wars, the memory holding of all that had gone on in the past, civilization basically. It's all going down the tubes now for the new whack job normal. And of course, the UFO field would be the prime target of all that, and hence these never-ending efforts of minimizing the significance of Rendlesham, but all these weird bit players, it's of all the cases out there in our field, nothing quite matches the rogues gallery of all these clowns and whack jobs that have attached themselves to Rendlesham. And that's deliberate. It's in order to increase the noise to signal ratio. And it's yet another reason why a lot of these newbies in our field refuse to do more than just stick a toe into Rendlesham, because it comes with too much baggage. It's too overwhelming. There's too much information really for them to bother with. It's not some little 5-minute video they can click on, right? So, we're doing our part to bring Rendlesham back front and center where it belongs. And I always look at things from a historical perspective, because that's what I'm into, is real history. And all the aspects, again, that I said earlier of the human aspect to it, the alien abductions, the missing time, the skullduggery afterwards, if taken on a case-by-case basis and put together, we still have arguably the most important case of all time. And in the time we got left, Steve, I'd like your thoughts on where we can possibly push Rendlesham further out, if that's possible. What we can do to, maybe you can say a word to any potential people who want to come forward, and even before Capitol Green, the documentary comes out, what they can do to make their voices heard in all this, and your thoughts on that, Larry.
Well, I think it'd be nice if more people came forward. As far as my night, it was only me and Palmer, so there's nobody else to come forward. And one of the only reasons I even injected myself in this whole thing was people were saying, "Oh, well, the officers must have known, that they must have already been participants in this." And that's why I detailed the night I had my incident. They seem absolutely as clueless as I was about what was going on, at least at that point. I don't think they'd been read into anything. After that, I don't know. But yeah, that night they were as wide-eyed and bushy-tailed as the rest of us trying to figure out what was going on, but as far as new people coming in and stuff, it just seems everybody's lazy. I wrote a book. I could tell you probably on 10 fingers and 10 toes how many copies I sold. Nobody wants to read it. Everybody just wants to go to a podcast, listen for 20, 30 minutes, and get on with their life. And I mean, this case is so much bigger than that. If somebody wants to get into it, they need to get into it, like both feet, head to toe, and do their own research. But nobody's going to do that. Everybody's lazy these days. I mean, that's why I said I've got a real problem with investigators versus what I call parasites. Just like Larry said, they just attach to you, they suck you dry, they move on to the next case, write another book, do whatever to advance their agendas, or what I call a quasi-religion. I mean, when you start messing with people's religion and saying, "Yeah, I really don't think you're a orc from Zork and you're not a Palladian," then people start getting upset. So, when you can remove the tinfoil hats from the whole subject and actually get people in there that are scientists, researchers, and something like that, great. But I think the government's probably going to keep it the way it is and keep it all messed up and convoluted, because nobody wants to know what the truth is, or they don't want everybody to know what the truth is, whatever that truth may be. Yeah, I don't think we'll ever find out unless they genuinely want us to find out, or if something happens and some alien lands on the lawn of the White House, then maybe something will happen. But
There is some damage control at work, because they're definitely trying to change the narrative. Larry, your thoughts on all this and about the possibility and hopefully more witnesses coming forward, especially after Cable Green comes out, if it does.
well, it better, because how many 6 years can do you have? I agree with all Stephen said, and yourself. I have spoken to some people quiet privately, for real, that have said to me, with what they've put you through, obviously you got around the UFO types, because I'm not talking about a foot person like yourself, James. There's a lot of good people I've met over the years. And then there's the nefarious and or just the plain ignorant or fame hookers or whatever you want. There's no fame you want, folks. And but my view is that, and I saw Gary in his book, Oh, Come Forward. Well, that's very easy to say, looking out in outside from inside, like Steve and I can. And this is no offense to you. I wouldn't wish it. And they've seen what, say for me, for example, the attacks, the this, and then, lies. Say, you want bad things about me? Ask Steve about Rhode Island. Anyway, you wish, there's a few people I'd wish it on. They couldn't down to this day. So I'm not an advocate for people now coming forward. I think Capel Green more is going to surprise some people. That it is how being, I am the whistleblower of Rendlesham. No matter what, people don't like that, but that's the facts. And the matter lies that there's some people that have said, I wouldn't go near this thing now. I've seen what they've done to you. I've seen what they've done to even, some of the darlings. Jim has his attackers. John has his. I'm sure Adrian can find a that aren't, old Adrian, and he's a lovely guy. I'm not knocking it, but and then you have to look at how the general public still view this. I live in, Liverpool. I think it's a progressive, the Beatles and all that come from, Ringo comes from down the road here, But I can tell he hasn't been singing tonight because this is horrific tonight here, the singing. Oh, it's horrible.
Must be me over there singing.
You have the average person. They just think, if they know me in general, just, the UFO thing. The people have not evolved. They don't even report about this ATIP stuff here in England or that Congress have had sit downs about this recently. It's not reported here. The newspaper headlines and the still, we're flying saucer spotters where, it's just the same headlines they had in 1983, bug-eyed aliens, all that kind of thing. And it's just a laugh to sell newspapers, and it has not changed. And you got the people behind you. I know even here, oh, yeah, right, always a bit that crazy yank. But you'll find the same mentality home in the States. Sometimes they're in your family, sometimes. Until years go by and they go, holy crap, I had no idea. And you're my brother Scott, right? I had no gut. He said, Larry, I'm sorry, I had no idea. He said, I thought you were having a laugh on the family. And I didn't know. But I think the general public are ignorant and willfully ignorant and intentionally made to be ignorant. And then there's just plain ignorant people running around. But, yeah, I don't know what the. Yeah, to give a voice to sound like Steve in this film, if I never do another thing, that's fine. I'll always come on your show, James, with Steve. And Steve, tell the folks about your book. I've been pushing, I try, and it's a great book. But what's the title? You must promote, promote, promote.
All right. Yeah, well,
Which one?
actually, so my book is called Rendlesham to Redemption, A Story of Transformation. And that's one thing is everybody signs me up for these podcasts and they just sit down and go, okay, what'd you see? And it's like, well, my book's got a couple chapters about Rendlesham. It's got a chapter about Larry. It's got a chapter about a little bit of the aftermath. But then the other half of the book is about my life afterwards. It's about me falling on my face 100 times and picking myself back up. It's got nothing to do with the UFO situation. That was just the catalyst to my downfall, you know? So, I mean, it's an interesting read about, hope. Don't give up hope. Just keep trying, stick your nose to the grindstone, and, sooner or later you'll make it, you know? You know, that's one thing I always had an issue with, Larry, was everybody craps on you about, oh, you did this, you did that, all these accusations. Then they look at me and they go, oh, Steve's in a nice, decent upright. Are you kidding me? If I told them the truth about half the, I couldn't write half the stuff on the book I wrote. I'd be in an international court. You know? I mean, seriously. And I'm the darling child. What are you, crazy? Way more evil stuff than you've ever done.
I've only been half evil, but I have read, I have done everything short of shoot Kennedy, even though I was only two and a half. Short of that, time traveled back, but I have read things. I'm like, my God, I'd be in prison for life, all this kind of thing. I held licensed industry here and government approved, license and all, criminal record background. But I've read it all. But that was particularly a very famous troll and supporter of and friends with the 7/7 bombers of all things. And yet she got a lot of traction, we know who she is. And it was this bunch up. And I was very stupid to get around people, I wrote a book with one like that. I don't hate Peter, but I looked at him kind of like a big brother in some ways. And I could be, like my ex said to me, she goes, well, when you were drinking, which I used to, heavy, you could be kind of nasty and all. So you can, and I said, well, yeah, I'll hands up to that. And certain things, I'm no saint, but man, some of the things, my son read all that stuff on the internet and they wouldn't want to meet him in an alley, but they, it's not nice when your kids read this stuff and they know otherwise. Family know. I just want out. I want the best for you and that roundhouse build you're doing. And the media, for 40, 41 years, something. To Rendlesham. I have to say, and you talk about the Art Bells. I used to fall asleep on his show. He had the commercials, and I'm not knocking him. And so many people, but you're the most engaging. Even though I know you like you, one of the most engaging broadcasters because you have knowledge way beyond just the flying saucer talks. And like Steve was telling about his book, Rendlesham, it is a human story again. So it's not a flying saucer book. I used to think my Left at Eastgate book wasn't a UFO book, really. It's kind of a real schizophrenic kind of book, but it's all true. And but it's not, and that's all right. It had its run, and I may do it again. I may not. Who knows? I'm lazy. But I just want the film, Cable Green, to be out this year, as I'm promised it will. I need to see it, and I hope it brings very good closure to it, to folks like Steve and myself. It will bring back those days. I have seen some things of it. And of course, you get a free Blu-ray or whatever the heck these things are, but it will be out this year. If and I guarantee it will be out this year.
Yeah, it's going to be epic when it does come out. And thank you for saying that, by the way. My feeling has always been that the truth is what's important, and the point about the misrepresentations and what have you. I mean, I don't know Larry Fawcett. I never knew him, but I would go back from the outside looking in and say, I think if I didn't know any better, Fawcett botched this first debriefing of you. I mean, he could have gotten so much more out of you. She didn't have to have that skeptical attitude about the aliens. So for at the outset, there was some, hindrances, at work. So, but this is a process of rectifying all this, and that's what my role is. And one quick point before I forget. I'm of the old Leonard Stringfield type. So when witnesses, especially ex-military types, come to me, I'm absolutely fine if they want it to be anonymous, because I have no problems with people screaming, oh, you won't tell us their identities. Well, I'm not supposed to tell you their identities. That was the condition of coming forward and sharing information. So I'm definitely open to any information shared anonymously, that if we're given permission, and it doesn't have to be permission to share all of the given information, just however much the source is willing to allow us to release. And I'd be happy just to do that, because I'm just looking for more pattern data correlations that will fill in the blanks of Rendlesham. So just want to put it out there. I know it's a minefield. I'm not asking all these witnesses to step forward and walk into a minefield. I'm asking if they feel so inclined, come forth, share whatever they're comfortable sharing, and we'll do it completely anonymously, and to safeguard their security.
I walked in a minefield once.
Well, fellas, this has been a blast. Let's do it again. And thank you for battling through the commo issues, Larry. True trooper once again. Thank you, Steve. And mea
You're welcome.
culpa. I botched the time zone difference, because I'm working with two different cats, one in the continental U.S., the other in the U.K., and me down under. And I botched the time zone difference. So Steve came on earlier than he needed to, but at least we had a good chat, prior to Larry coming on. So once again, Steve, once again, Larry, thank you for your service to the country. Thank you for everything you've done over the years of bringing this information out.
Oh, you're welcome.
You
Thanks for
very
having me on.
and
Too.
to our dear listeners out there, wherever you may be, whatever you may be doing, have a very pleasant time. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.